Good morning, Your Honor, members of the court. I'm here on behalf of Mr. Lacy, but in some respects, in many respects, I'm here on behalf of pretty much any criminal or civil litigant that's going to deal with this, the two issues of this case, the main one, the first one being the most comprehensive. This case represents the jurisdictional issue, represents the logical and perhaps unintended conclusion that started back with Wickard v. Filburn and on going forward, that brought the Commerce Clause with the ability to control behavior crossing state lines. And what it's been extended to in this case is, if you use a device which accesses the Internet, the federal government can decide if they want to regulate that, either civilly or criminally. That's what we have here. We have here a very dangerous precedent if this case is not reversed and, in fact, dismissed on the jurisdictional basis, because there's people in this room right now, which I would assume either use or have in their possession, devices capable of accessing the Internet. And if one of them walks out onto Dearborn...
Should we take a poll?
If one of them walks out on the street and gets that stolen from them, that, using precedent of this jurisdictional issue in this case, would be something the federal government could decide if they want to regulate the theft of that device because it connects to the Internet, or have the potential to connect to the Internet, or it traveled in interstate commerce before the particular person on Dearborn Street purchased it. That is an illogical extension and contrary to what the founders intended when they...
That your client admitted during the plea colloquy with the judge that the child pornography in question was obtained through interstate commerce.
He admitted that they could prove that fact.
Right.
He's not a lawyer. He wasn't stating, Your Honor,
he was represented by counsel. He wasn't standing there in a hall by himself.
That's correct.
Fresh out of grammar school or anything.
That's correct, Your Honor. He admitted they could prove the fact that the bits and bytes that made up those images went through the Internet and landed on his computer.
So the argument's gone.
I don't think the argument's gone because I think that the Schaefer case from the Tenth Circuit and I think this court ought to rule that's not enough for federal jurisdiction. Because if you...
The defendant admits the jurisdictional element, that's enough for jurisdiction.
Well, I don't think that he can admit something that's not legally sufficient for jurisdiction. I mean, I don't think that's... He's admitting they could prove facts which would establish that that information went.
But that admission came after the prosecutor articulated the factual basis for the plea and what the government would prove. So there was some specificity to it. It wasn't just, I admit everything they... said I did. I mean, it was all articulated on the record. He was asked if he had any objection.
Honor.
He had no objection. Is that what you did? Yeah, that's what I did.
I agree, Your Honor, and I'm saying that those facts that the government laid out, the only tie to federal jurisdiction is the stuff that's involved in this case went through the Internet. And our position is this court ought to rule that's not enough. Because if this court doesn't rule that it's not enough, you're going to see a very slow but inexorable creep of federal jurisdiction which will cover the entire country and every device that connects to the Internet.
Your argument guts the child pornography statutes at the federal level.
Pardon me, Your Honor, I didn't hear that.
If we accept your argument, all the federal child pornography statutes would be gutted because most of this stuff goes over the Internet, and this would be mostly a state crime.
I don't think they would be gutted at all because there are instances where both involving this conduct, physical items are transferred across state lines, people go across state lines, there's more activity that are involved.
But the core evil that Congress sought to regulate is this stuff going through the Internet.
Correct. And just like the Lopez case with guns, there the core evil the government thought to regulate was guns close to schools. And the Supreme Court said, sorry, that's definitely an evil. It's definitely a bad thing to have guns within 1,000 feet of a school. But we're not going to let the federal government regulate that. It's left to the states.
I didn't read your argument as a Lopez-Morrison Commerce Clause sort of argument. I thought it was a sufficiency of the plea and the proof here, rather than a substantive challenge to the statute. Now it sounds like you're making a substantive challenge to the statute.
Well, what the position is that they could never prove jurisdiction. They don't have jurisdiction over this kind of conduct that's even laid out and which the client agrees he engaged in. So they couldn't have proven this jurisdictional element because the statute doesn't cover this.
I misunderstood your argument. So you are making a substantive facial attack on the statute, as applied to the Internet.
Yes, as applied to the Internet, which is the only activity.
Your guy, but as applied to anybody who uses the Internet.
As applied to anyone who has a device which connects to the Internet, all of a sudden becoming regulable by the federal government. I think that's a very dangerous precedent. And no one's really paying attention to this in a lot of these other cases, and I'm presenting it here for you to consider, because there are cases which have said, solely on the Internet alone, we'll let the federal government regulate that. But if you step back for a moment and think, when you go back and sit in your offices, when you drive home in your car, sit at your house, how many devices are around you which go over the Internet? Now if something criminal, something that society deems is criminal, happens merely with that device, and the person never leaves their house, they've now become regulable by the federal government. That's a national police force, and that really eliminates the need for a lot of state laws.
How many other Internet-based federal statutes are there?
Well, I wouldn't call this one Internet-based. It covers
No, but if all kinds you know, of a ruling in your favor on this argument would call into question the constitutionality under the Commerce Clause of any Internet-based crime
federally adopted. It would be focused just on this statute, but it could be used as a decision that other courts could look at, and I think they ought to. I think the time has come to realize we cannot just continue to let the federal government say it's the Internet, we have jurisdiction. It's a very dangerous position. Pardon me?
What about wire fraud, for example? That doesn't require going out of the house.
Well, it doesn't, but there's a physical thing. When the wire fraud statute was created, there were poles and wires that went across state lines that if they got knocked down or cut could destroy all kinds of things between states.
So if I'm hooked up to cable or something, it's okay, but unfortunately they won't come out to my house, so we got one of these little discs out there. And if it doesn't snow, you can get it from almost anywhere.
What I'm saying to you, Your Honor, is there's unlike the cases where there's a physical thing that's involved, there's no physical thing traveling across the Internet. It's a little zeros and ones and electrons. And the problem is not only that, but the Internet is now ubiquitous. It's all around us. And if the federal government's allowed to exert jurisdiction over anything because it traveled through the Internet to that device, think about what that means for all of our lives.
Well,
why does the state of Illinois...
Like Wickard versus Filburn, which... Yeah, I got nailed on that about 20 years ago.
Well,
Judge Bauer might even remember that one. But anyway...
Think where that started. It's hunks of wheat. It's something you can see. It's something that can affect other
right
people's growing
farm.
Of wheat. What's that?
Right on your own farm. Didn't
right
worry
on your
it.
Own farm, right. Yeah. I think that you go from that to the Internet era, these things don't even connect logically to the jurisdiction being permitted. The one other point that I think is equally important is the use by this court, and it's been done by other district courts, of merely viewing digital images and declaring whether their constitutionally protected types appear to be child pornography, or the criminal types. No, they're real child pornography. And the problem with what the court did here is there's no case in the country, and there's no expert in digital imaging who believes that that court or any court has the capacity to make that distinction. In fact, the government's leading expert, as I quote in one of the cases, Fabrizio, testified under oath that he couldn't do what this judge in this case purported to do, which is...
That's why judges get paid all that extra money, you know.
Well, Your Honor, take it away from digital images and look at it like fingerprints or DNA. This is equivalent to the judge saying, you know, I'm going to determine on a relevant contact and conduct analysis that these two pieces of cloth with bloodstains on them, one of them has your DNA on them, and therefore you were involved in that crime, and I'm going to enhance your sentence. Just by, I don't know, looking at it or flipping a coin or whatever it might be, the judge is not a DNA expert. He can't tell whose DNA is where.
I thought there was expert testimony from someone from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children that the children depicted in over 1,000 of these images were actual known children.
Well, there was testimony from an FBI agent that database contained images which appeared to be the same as this. But if you look in my sentencing memorandum, the reality of that testimony is it's at least four layers of hearsay. There's a database that receives images from sources that they do not authenticate, and that database's report in this case and in every case in the country has a header on the top of it, every page, saying you cannot use this report to verify the age or the images it contains. So we certainly don't want judges enhancing sentences based on an FBI agent who tells them that a database told them that an officer from Portugal told them that a victim in Portugal told the officer. And if you look at the chart, it's kind of hard to think of it in words, but I actually have a chart in the sentencing memorandum which lays this out. We're talking four layers of hearsay, and now we enhance his sentence beyond the minimum that the statute entitled him to be sentenced under. So the problem there is not only real for these issues, but also for the jury question, and it'll affect those cases as well. I'll reserve my two minutes for rebuttal.
Just blew it off.
Oh, it's just, well, I saw red. It's stop. I didn't want to go. I want to make sure I have my 2 minutes to rebut. So,
well, you did have 2 minutes of rebuttal. It's
pardon me, Your Honor?
You've already used your 2 minutes of rebuttal.
Oh, I just
saw
the light.
That's what the red light means. When the yellow light was on, you had 2 minutes.
Oh, I didn't. Well, I might as well finish up.
Well, you have finished. That's right. The red light. It means
you're finished.
Well,
that's why I was bailing out when I saw the red light.
That's the thing to do.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Liggins.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Tom Liggins, and I represent the United States in this appeal. At the outset, I want to address the counsel's contention that he's raising a challenge, a Lopez-type challenge to the statute, and I would just point the court to page 11 of his brief at subheading C, where he states Lacey does not challenge the constitutionality of the statute, but only proof of a statutory element. I think any Lopez type of argument is thus waived, and I will move on to the arguments that he actually did raise. The first of that is the jurisdictional argument. This court has held since at least the late 1950s that the interstate nexus element does not affect subject matter jurisdiction. And as Judge Sykes pointed out, in any event, he waived it twice in this case. With regard to the alleged error at sentencing and finding in excess of 600 images, I would only point out that the judge based that finding on three bases, one of which was that this individual defendant had 12 video images, which under the sentencing guidelines constitute 900 images. So that alone would support the district judge's finding, and I will yield the rest of my time.
Thank you, counsel. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.